If you're a parent, or really any caregiver, you know that specific sinking feeling.
Oh.
Your kid develops a cough or a fever, your mind starts racing. Is this just a cold, or is this the flu?
And if it is the flu, when do you need to worry? I mean, when does it go from being manageable at home to a real emergency?
Exactly. And that anxiety is so real, the difference can feel really subtle, and there's just so much noise out there.
Our mission today is to cut through all of that noise. We want to give you a clear, actionable roadmap for pediatric flu. We've gone through the sources to distill it all down for you.
And our sources today are focused on that triage process, giving you the thresholds and timelines you need to make good decisions.
Flu is incredibly common. It affects millions every year.
We always have to say, vaccination is the number one best tool for prevention. It prevents serious illness. It limits spread.
Absolutely. Today, we're focusing on that moment when the symptoms have already appeared. What does decisive action actually look like?
Most flu cases, thankfully, are manageable at home.
But knowledge is power. And when symptoms do escalate, speed is everything. So we're going to walk through three key phases today. First, how to even identify the flu in a sea of other viruses. Second, the immediate steps for home management.
And third, the big one.
The non-negotiable critical alarm bells that mean you need to seek immediate care.
Let's jump right into identification, because that's the first hurdle, and it can be the most confusing one when you're in the moment.
It's a huge challenge. RSV, COVID-19, even a really nasty cold. They can all start with similar symptoms.
It's a fever, a cough, a runny nose. It all looks the same at first.
But our sources emphasize that the key differentiator lies in three things: the speed of onset, the order of the symptoms, and whether there are lower respiratory issues.
Let's make it practical. My kid wakes up feeling unwell. What am I looking for in those first few hours?
The speed of onset. That is your first, most critical clue.
Yeah.
Common cold, symptoms tend to build gradually. Over a day, maybe two, they wake up with a sniffle, feel worse by lunch, maybe a low fever later that night.
It sort of creeps up on you.
The flu typically hits like a truck. The onset is abrupt. You go from feeling totally fine to having a high fever, 102 to 104 degrees Fahrenheit, and major body aches almost immediately.
So that's the thing to watch for, that sudden high fever.
The rapid high fever and the severe fatigue. Those are the key things that separate it from the slow build of a cold.
And what about distinguishing it from RSV or COVID-19?
Yeah, that's where you start looking at the lower respiratory tract. In children, especially in infants, RSV often comes with more severe lower respiratory symptoms.
Like wheezing.
Exactly. Wheezing, or you might hear a crackly sound when they breathe. That's from inflammation deep in the small airways. And COVID-19, while it's so variable, sometimes it has that unique loss of taste or smell, which is really rare in the flu. So for a parent, the takeaway is this: sudden high fever with severe muscle aches, that points very strongly toward the flu.
Speed of onset is the first big differentiator. Once we suspect it's the flu, let's talk about that timeline. What should parents be expecting?
Knowing the typical timeline is so important, because a deviation from it, that's often your first sign of trouble.
Got it.
So once that abrupt onset hits, the fever usually lasts for about 3 to 5 days. Congestion and cough might actually get a little worse around day three. The child will likely be highly fatigued for up to a week.
Yeah.
But most kids, even if they feel absolutely miserable, they'll show clear signs of improvement, like the fever breaking, some energy returning, within 5 to 7 days.
So if that timeline gets broken, say the fever spikes again after it's been gone for a day or two, that's a signal.
That is an immediate, non-negotiable call to the doctor. A worsening of symptoms after they've started to get better is a huge red flag.
But for the vast majority of cases, we're moving into home management.
And for most children, that does not mean a sprint to the hospital.
Well, let's talk about that. What are the doctor-recommended actions for home care? Well,
since a real diagnosis often needs a lab test, your first move is the same no matter what the virus is.
Which is?
Children will recover just fine without any special medications or hospital visits.
What does aggressive home management look like specifically?
We prioritize two things above all else: hydration and comfort.
Hydration?
Hydration cannot be overstated. With a high fever, a child dehydrates so quickly. The goal is small, frequent sips of fluid, water, electrolyte solutions, even ice pops, every 15 to 30 minutes, even if they don't want it.
And for comfort, that's where over-the-counter medications come in. What's the strategy?
We use acetaminophen, so Tylenol or ibuprofen, Motrin, to manage the fever and those bad body aches.
And the goal isn't to get rid of the fever completely, right?
The goal is not to eliminate the fever. It's to make the child comfortable enough to rest and to hydrate.
What about alternating them? I hear about that a lot.
Alternating can sometimes help, but you have to be so rigid about the dosage based on weight and the timing intervals. You have to be careful to avoid an accidental overdose.
That attention to detail is critical. So if a child is sick for a week, when should a parent think about getting outside medical advice? Assuming home care isn't failing, but it's not resolving quickly either.
For most non-critical cases, the recommendation is to try the OTC meds and fluids and then seek a pediatrician visit. A lot of the time, you can do that with telehealth.
Virtual care seems perfect for this.
It's excellent for flu. They can assess the symptoms and decide if a prescription medication is needed.
You mentioned prescriptions earlier. When do those come into play?
So if the flu is confirmed, there are FDA-approved medications like Otemiflu. It can really reduce the severity and the duration of the illness. But there's a critical window.
Okay.
These medications are most effective if you start them within 48 hours of when symptoms first appear.
That's why getting that virtual visit quickly can be important.
Exactly. It gets the prescription started sooner when it can do the most good.
Okay, so we've covered identification, the timeline, and the first steps for home care. When do we move past the virtual consult and start to worry about severity? This is the core question for every parent. When does the flu turn serious?
This is the moment to really pause and listen closely. The vast majority of flu cases do not need a visit to the ER or the hospital.
But when they do escalate?
When they do, quick action is absolutely paramount. We need a clear, defined list of those serious flu symptoms in children. These are the alarm bells.
This is where it gets critical. So give us that list, the non-negotiable signs that mean get help.
Let's group them into three core areas that a parent can observe: breathing, hydration, and neurological function.
Okay, let's start with breathing.
You need to watch for rapid or labored breathing. And this is more than just a stuffy nose.
What does it look like?
Look for the child using accessory muscles, the skin around their chest wall sucking in when they breathe, or their nostrils flaring out. And any blue or gray color in their lips or fingernails is an absolute emergency.
Their oxygen levels are dropping?
Correct. Second area, hydration alarms. If the child is severely dehydrated, meaning they cannot keep any fluids down because of persistent vomiting, or a big one, if they have not urinated for 8 hours longer, that needs rapid intervention.
And for babies?
For infants, it's refusing to eat or having way fewer wet diapers for a long period of time. That's the equivalent alarm.
Okay, and the third area was neurological function.
Yes. This can mean the virus is affecting the brain or central nervous system.
What are the signs of that?
You're looking for confusion and inability to wake up or interact when you try to rouse them, or, of course, seizures.
That's terrifying.
It is. And another big red flag is if the child's fever gets better for a bit, but they stay lethargic and unresponsive. Also, any fever that comes with a rash needs to be taken seriously.
That is a tough list, but it's so necessary. So if a parent sees one of these severe symptoms, how do they decide what to do? Call 911, go to the ER, call the pediatrician.
This decision tree is key. If you see a very serious alarm symptom, I'm talking severe difficulty breathing, seizures, or unresponsiveness, you call 911 immediately. Those are seconds count emergencies.
And the difference between going to the ER versus calling the doctor?
If the symptoms are severe or really concerning, let's say nonstop vomiting that's clearly leading to dehydration, you go straight to the emergency room.
If you're not sure.
If you're standing there debating how severe it is, maybe you're only seeing one mild alarm bell, your first step should be to call your pediatrician or use telehealth. They can help you figure out the severity in real time.
We need to mention immunocompromised children because their threshold is totally different.
Absolutely. For a child with a chronic medical condition or who is immunocompromised, their body just doesn't have the same reserves to fight off the flu.
So their risk is higher.
Their threshold for immediate care is much lower. If an immunocompromised child shows any significant flu symptoms, seeking ER care should be prioritized, often much sooner than for another child.
And the reason we monitor all of this so closely is because of the potential for complications.
Right.
What are the common risks? And then what are the serious but thankfully rare outcomes?
The common complications are unpleasant, but usually manageable. Things like secondary bacterial infections that cause ear infections or sinus problems. And those are usually treated with antibiotics after the flu itself has peaked.
But the serious complications, that's why this is so vital.
The really serious complications include pneumonia, which is a major concern, severe dehydration that requires fluids, brain dysfunction or encephalitis, and tragically, death
monitoring for breathing issues?
We monitor the breathing closely because that is the leading indicator of a flu progressing to pneumonia, and that is often in severe pediatric cases.
And this just underscores how serious this illness is every single season. The flu is a deadly threat, not just a bad cold.
Yes.
And we know this because children died from the flu during the 2024-2025 flu season. That grim reality is the whole reason we're having this deep dive.
It makes it really clear that the question is never just, does my child have the flu? How severe is this flu right now? And is it escalating beyond what we'd expect? Knowing these specific symptoms lets you take decisive, focused action.
This has given us a clear roadmap. We know how to identify that abrupt onset, the specific steps for aggressive home management.
And critically, those immediate emergency thresholds for breathing, hydration, and neurological function.
We've given you those red flags.
And please remember that while we focused on the serious alarm bells, most cases can be managed with professional guidance outside of a hospital setting. You can use tools like telehealth and prescriptions when they're appropriate.
You're now equipped with the knowledge to recognize when your home stops being the right place for treatment.
Exactly.
This dive really clarifies the immense responsibility of monitoring. We know the key indicators to watch for, but for our final thought for you to explore, given that managing fluid loss is so critical in flu cases and so often leads to ER visits, how does the increased push for at-home IV therapy, monitored by visiting nurses, potentially change the landscape of pediatric flu treatment and the very definition of immediate action in the future?
That raises a really important question about how our medical infrastructure is evolving to handle these common yet potentially severe illnesses. Until next time, stay curious and stay informed.
We'll see you on the next deep dive.